right, joining me now, he is our fantasy football expert here at PFF and the host of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. It is Ian Harditz. Ian, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on, my man.
Appreciate you having me on, Ari. You know, I've had your notifications going to my phone for quite some time now, so finally good to talk to you, in podcast form. So, yeah, man, as we were saying pre-show, I know it's June. A lot of people maybe aren't quite in the fantasy mode yet, but fantasy, real life, let's talk some undervalued players. Why the hell not?
Exactly. This is what my plan was, and you kind of gave us a little bit of a preview. So we're a couple months away from fantasy football. Everyone understands that. But most of these rosters in the NFL are basically set, especially the top half of these rosters. So what I wanted to do is basically give out our top 10 fantasy sleepers for this season. And in a way, if you don't want to look at it from a fantasy angle, it's our top 10 under the radar players who we believe will do really well this upcoming season. So if you feel like it's too early for fantasy, look at it from that angle. And I was just told before we started that in the underdog fantasy league, the winner of their main one, that guy drafted in June. So I guess if you're looking at it from a fantasy perspective, I guess keep that in mind. So we have two different angles to look at it, whatever you want to look at it from. There it is. So let's get started here. Ian, you are the guest. Give me your first name that you have in mind here for this upcoming season.
So first of all, these sleepers, I'm defining it outside the top 12 quarterbacks and tight ends in terms of their current underdog ADP and outside top 24 running backs and wide receivers. All right, it pisses me off when I see people talking about last year, Calvin Ridley's a sleeper. Like, no, he's going as a top 10 wide receiver. Maybe you're sleeping on him, but you shouldn't be because the rest of the world isn't. So with that out there, wanted to make it clear before I name some players that people are going to be maybe a little skeptical of. Quarterback Justin Fields coming in right now as the QB 17 at ADP over at Underdog Fantasy. Look, last year was terrible. We saw the game plan come out, Andy Dalton, starting and getting that chance early on. Like, everything went wrong for Fields. And looking at how the Bears offseason has gone, I understand the lack of optimism. But again, we're talking about fantasy football, not real life quarterback development. Nobody was exactly complaining about Jalen Hurts and Taysom Hill's surrounding cast over the past few years because they scored fantasy points when they run around like they do. When we have pocket quarterbacks in the world that aren't adding any rushing usage, like when we get someone like Justin Fields or a pass catching running back or even your Deebo Samuels of the world, these players that have multiple means of production, we see them time and time again turn into the closest things that fantasy football has to cheat codes. And Justin Fields was starting to finally show that towards the end of 2021. You look at his last five starts, he finished as the overall fantasy QB3, QB9, QB29, got hurt, and then the QB8 and QB10 again. On the season, only Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, and Josh Allen average more rushing yards per game than Justin Fields. So QB17, man, I will sign up for that. We're seeing Trey Lance already going as a top 12 quarterback. Every year, there's usually one guy that we can get in the later rounds of drafts that, again, provides that rushing upside to really get excited about. I think it's Justin Fields this year. Maybe they take one of these good wide receivers still on the market. I'd appreciate it. But again, just the way Justin Fields plays, he's perfectly capable of being a far better fantasy quarterback than real life option.
Yeah, that's an interesting pick. And I have a couple of questions about the quarterbacks probably later on. The thing about Chicago, they hired Luke Getsy this offseason, their offensive coordinator. I've heard a lot of great things about him. I know the wide receiver room doesn't look amazing right now. They're very high on Darnell Mooney. There's a name that I wanted to put on this list for me, but he ended up being outside of it. Velus Jones, their rookie third round pick, another guy who I've heard some great things about him. A lot of people had knocks on him because of his age. I think that if anything, for fantasy purposes, it actually helps him because he has a lot of experience. It is a name that I would keep an eye on in deeper leagues. So getting us started here, we have a quarterback with Justin Fields. Now, when you mentioned before that I'm not 100% sure with my guys if they fall into the sleeper categories for you. So after I give my answer, let me know if I'm in the right category or not. But my first pick here is we're going to go to wide receiver and Russell Gage in Tampa Bay.
You stole one of mine, Ari. Come on.
Oh, there we go. All right. I feel like I'm an expert right now. But yeah, I mean, this one is fairly simple. And I'm not even looking at stats for the most part. It's simply because Tom Brady wanted him in Tampa Bay. 3 years, $30 million. He wasn't getting that deal if not for Tom Brady. I know that for a fact. And really, he made it known to Russell Gage personally and called him throughout the free agency process. His agents, in a way, kind of took advantage of that by getting that deal out of Tampa Bay. But looking at that roster, Chris Godwin is unlikely to be ready for the start of the season. He's obviously recovered from that torn ACL at the end of last year against New Orleans on a Sunday night football game. The Buccaneers wide receivers, They ranked fifth in total targets and third in routes over the last 2 years. And again, without Godwin in that lineup, he's going to be across from Mike Evans in that offense. And looking at the last couple of years, he had 786 yards 2 years ago. He had 770 yards last year. And that was in a bigger role in Atlanta with a team that didn't have much weapons and the offensive line, which wasn't really great, which didn't give Matt Ryan that much time to look around. So I feel like Russell Gage in that offense with Tom Brady, a guy that he wanted to come to Tampa Bay, could be a fantasy steal this year if he is a sleeper in your mind, which it sounds like he is.
Couldn't agree more, man. Currently going off the board as the wide receiver 43 over to underdog. I have him ranked inside that top 40 easily because of basically everything you just said. I mean, even once Chris Godwin is good to go, which to your point, doesn't look like week one is looking all that great. He already got paid. They've said the whole offseason, there's no timetable. Why would they be? Look at that division. They're playing for January and February. There's no need to rush this man along. So we're looking at Brady's potential number two target in that time. And then even once he's gone, you said the stats yourself, top five in wide receiver targets. Like on a lot of teams, no, we don't want the number three wide receiver, but in Tampa Bay and Buffalo and these pass happy offenses, we can absolutely live with that. So right now, like one of my main talking points is always try to draft players closer to their floor than their ceiling when possible. And I think that's exactly what we have in Russell Gage. I've heard some people try to say similar things about James Washington and Dallas, and maybe he does have that in his range of outcomes, but big difference between Washington's, you know, $1 million 1 year contract and Gage getting $30 million over three. I know they can get out of it a little bit earlier, but again, echoing everything you said and just the fact that he is as cheap as he is right now, I think we're only going to see his ADP go up as we get closer to the season and people realize that Godwin's health is looking more and more uncertain.
Right. And there just has to be the understanding that Tom Brady wanted him to come there. It wasn't like a Jason Light, oh, we're going to target this guy. It was Tom, I'm coming out of retirement. Let's target this guy to come to the offense. That all happened. They got him and now he's there. So he's definitely there as my number one guy. Ian, who do you have number two on your list?
I'll go with running back Miles Sanders over there for the Eagles. Going off the board, RB27, 173 touches last season without a touchdown. Just absolutely atrocious luck. And going back when I was previewing the Philadelphia Eagles, I've been going through every single team over the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast with my guy, Dwayne McFarland. So check that out if you guys are looking for more in-depth information. But with Sanders, my initial thought was when you have a dual threat quarterback like Jalen Hurts, like we saw Hurts, the dude was scoring every other possession seemingly once they got inside the 5 yard line, but I was surprised to find even taking away Hurts's goal line rush attempts, the Eagles were still one of just four offenses to give their running backs at least 20 carries near the goal line. This was a run heavy offense that really did prioritize Miles Sanders. He led the way with 15 goal line snaps. Again, it was just in my mind, a fluke, unlucky season. And then when you start looking at the roster moves that have happened throughout this offseason, you see that Miles Sanders should once again be that undisputed lead back in Philly. Boston Scott's back, Kenneth Gainwell's back, that's fine. But Jordan Howard's out of the picture, didn't add anyone of substance in the draft or free agency. I mean, last year, like the popular lingo in the fantasy world was this RB dead zone. Guys like Miles Sanders and other running backs, they were going in round three, round four. And it was just a bad area where honestly, we were trying to take the better wide receivers at that spot. But Ari, man, don't hate the player, hate the ADP. Miles Sanders is now going like in round seven or eight. So when you go into one of these underdog drafts, like you will literally see about the running back 27 and Sanders like lined up next to about the wide receiver 45. So wide receivers are flying off the board so much faster than Sanders, and that's fine. Take them ahead. But if you find yourself, you know, you take a Mark Andrews early, you only have one or two running backs getting into round seven or eight, you can do a lot worse in a lead back in an offense that seems to be ascending up, man. Everything we've heard about Jalen Hurts taking this leap into his third season sounds good. Adding AJ Brown, that offense should open up things underneath. Miles Sanders is someone that people just seem to be holding 2021 against him far too much. He still projects for 200 plus, if not 250 plus combined carries and targets. Again, don't hate the player, hate the ADP. And right now Miles Sanders is awfully affordable.
Yeah. And you know, I'm just looking through the numbers here because I made a tweet last year in the first half of the year where he was just not getting carries in the first half of games. I think it was under 10 every single game for the first 6 or 7 weeks. Then something changed And it all kind of clicked, and Nick Sirianni started to believe in him. And it feels like, based off everything you just said, that's going to continue to roll over to next year. And actually, me and Doug Kyle, we actually talked to Nick Sirianni there in at the Combine, and he mentioned his running game and that he wants to have more of an approach where the hot hand is going to have it. And it sounds like it's Miles Sanders' job there to lose in Philadelphia. All right, so let's keep this going here. So far, we have a quarterback, a running back, and a wide receiver. I'm going to stick to the wide receivers here. And again, you'll let me know if it's a sleeper or not, but I have Juju Smith-Schuster here. Is that a sleeper or is that a
little No, that's fair. He's going wide receiver 28. I'm not in love with that, though, so I'm excited to hear
what you have to say. All right, so let's go through some things here. So first of all, Tyreek Hill not being there, all those targets have to go somewhere. That's number one. Secondly, Andy Reid has wanted to sign Juju in two consecutive offseasons. Dating back to last year, he made a very aggressive push. Juju badly wanted to stay in Pittsburgh. Andy was constantly sending him text messages of the Lombardi Trophy, trying to convince him to come. He stayed in Pittsburgh, fine. This year, they finally get him, and he's now there. I like the fact that he's not officially like the top guy there. You have a Kelsey there, you have MVS there. Sky Moore was drafted, and of course, having Mahomes only makes it much better for him. And lastly, this is getting a little bit into my world and into the nitty-gritty of everything, but Juju's deal in Kansas City is heavy on incentives. It was reported as a one-year $10.75 million deal. But if you look at the numbers, it's really a one-year deal worth $3 million with another $7 million available in incentives for receptions, receiving yards, playing time, and making the Pro Bowl. So he has all that going for him. And again, he's in a contract year, so he still wants to get that big payday, which he has not gotten yet. So it feels like being in that offense, Andy Reid badly wanting him for 2 years and finally getting him and seeing that type of a contract and no longer having Tyreek Hill, I feel like Juju is due to finally have that big year he's been waiting for before finally getting his big payday. What do you think about that?
We've seen it happen. And with a lot of these guys that we're talking about in these ranges of drafts, you know, they're rookies or guys like MBS going to a new environment and we don't have the past history of success. So from that angle, I hear you. And again, if he's affordable enough, we can go with it. I'm just wondering where the same guy that we saw in 2017 and 2018 has been the last 3 years. And maybe injuries explains that because I know he's been playing constantly banged up, but I really don't think it's the Antonio Brown factor, man. Obviously having AB on the field is going to help shift coverage and things like that. But I remember the Juju that was just running away from the entire Patriots defense, looking like one of the biggest yak beasts in the entire league. Just haven't seen that guy over the past 3 years. And to me, that's independent of whatever Ben Roethlisberger was doing to the most recent versions of the Steelers offense. So on the one hand, I hear you with the incentives and maybe he does get up there, but I'm just confused if Juju, if they feel that good about him, how MBS was fetching the $30 million over 3 years that he was able to get. They did take Sky Moore in round two. Mecole's still there. It is wide open. I do wonder, though, in Kansas City and Green Bay, if they are just going to take this approach based on the resources they've added, where in Kansas City, it's Travis Kelce, and then it's a bunch of, you know, 2A, 2B, 2C, 2D, even Clyde Edwards-Helaire maybe working his way in there. So overall, I do think just the fact that we can talk about a potential wide receiver one for Patrick Mahomes going this late in the draft, you have that upside. Maybe I'm putting a little bit too much stock into what we saw from Juju playing banged up over the past
few years. I think somebody has to take over that role with Kelce there. So I'm banking on it being Juju. And I also just don't believe he's a wide receiver number one. When Antonio was there, he was the number two and it all opened up for him. And as soon as he left, it just wasn't the same. Ben was getting older. There was an OC change as well. A lot of things going on in that offense. Entering this offense, arguably the best one in the league with some of the best minds in the league as well there. It just feels like it should open up. He's also fully healthy from that shoulder surgery from last year. It feels like it could be time. Obviously, we'll see what happens on the field. But I just feel like Juju it's time for him to have that big year, which we saw the first 2 years. If it happens this year, we'll obviously see. But he's my second pick here, here at number two. So let's keep it rolling with number three. Who do you have?
I got another gross wide receiver that was a lot better a couple years ago. Kenny Golladay, currently going off the board.
Okay.
Wide receiver 57. Like, that is crazy to me. 56 wide receivers are going before Kenny Golladay in fantasy right now. And, you know, I think partially what I was just saying about Juju, maybe I didn't give enough credit to him playing through the pain and having to deal with all these nicks and bruises over the years. And Kenny Golladay, I don't think is getting that, you know, benefit of doubt from last year. He suffered a hamstring injury in August. He strained his hip in week 3, hyperextended his knee in week 5, suffers a rib injury in week 13. He says, screw it, I'm going to go out there and play. What's his reward? Catching passes from Mike Glennon and Jake Fromm down the stretch of the season. So it was just one of these situations in the offense where nothing went right for anyone in New York, having Brian Dable there and looking at the moves they've made at wide receiver. Sterling Shepard coming off the Achilles injury, his health cannot be guaranteed. Wandale Robinson, in my mind, is more of a threat to kind of things Kadarius Toney does. Like, maybe they both start, but he's not taking Kenny Galladay's job. The right. Giants still, in my opinion, have 72 million reasons why they should try to get a little bit out of Kenny G. So, you know, he was awesome in 2019, which is 8 games from Matthew Stafford. And even in 2020, he only had 4 healthy games, but he went over 100 yards and scored a touchdown in each of those times. So we have seen Daniel Jones provide some just offensive bursts periodically. And again, like, we're talking about Juju and Kenny Golladay, two potential wide receiver ones that are just being priced alongside a bunch of wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 types. So last year we had to take Golladay, you know, as a top 25 guy, miss me with that. But yeah, right now we can get a potential wide receiver 1 well outside the top 10 rounds of the draft.
Yeah, and Golladay was just, he was a contested catch machine in Detroit when he was there. Came to New York, injuries, as you mentioned. That entire team dealt with injuries, to be fair to them, and Daniel Jones. But now, new offensive system, Brian Dable comes in, Mike Kafka comes in. It's very interesting. You know, a name you didn't mention, I had him on this list as well, didn't end up making it. But what do you think about Kadarius Toney? I'm like someone who's just betting on the talent, but where do you sit on him?
I mean, if we do want to bet on the talent, man, he is the guy. Just looking at some of the things he's been able to do in terms of PFF yards per out run metric, I mean, he's just alongside a bunch of receivers that we ended up seeing accomplish very big things. You know, just specifically looking at it, rookie wide receivers with at least 2+ yards per out run over the last 5 years: AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Juju, Kadarius Toney, Renfrow, McLaurin, Kupp, Debo, Godwin, Claypool. Like, there really isn't a bust on that list. And I think just from the eye test, seeing what he did against both the Cowboys and the Saints early on in the year, I mean, he really popped off the screen. Unfortunately, had that Rams game where it looked like he was about to go off again, and then yes, he gets hurt. So just, you know, I'd be curious if you have an insight on just how his relations are with the Giants, because again, the Wandale Robinson pick, just, I'm a little worried about how that impacts Toney. And we haven't been getting the best news out of the Giants organization, but again, I don't really know how good those reports were anyway.
So ever since he got there, it's been a bit odd. Like, he was, when he was drafted in a rookie, like, you usually sign a waiver in case an injury happened before you sign your contract, you know, your deal is still there. So he held out despite that. It was like so odd, but he's had all these injuries, had a bunch of things. And then this offseason, there was that really odd moment where there were all those trade rumors. It sounds like everything is better. He finally made it into the building. Dave Ball is there. Joe Shane is there. There's actually a video on, I don't remember if it's the Giants Twitter account or the SNY Giants account, of him basically dancing with Joe Shane. It sounds like everything is good. It sounds like everything is good that they have him in the building. Again, when having the offensive minds like a Brian Dave Ball there, the explosiveness of this guy, it feels like something could definitely take off, assuming he stays healthy. It looks like the relationship is fine, and he'll be there for this season for sure. So he was on my list based off all of that. There's a lot of risk there, but we can't deny the talent, especially what we saw in that Dallas game last year. All right, let me keep this going here with my third pick, and I'm going to go to the running back position here, and it's a pick that some people might have forgotten about this guy, but what about Travis Etienne? Like, the Jaguars' first round pick last year, he didn't play because of a Lisfranc injury. He's close to fully healthy now. James Robinson is still recovering from his Achilles injury, which he suffered late last year, so there's an opening to be the guy in Jacksonville with a new head coach in Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson, of course, is an offensive guy. And then there's the chemistry of Trevor Lawrence dating back to Clemson, and we know the NFL is sort of this copycat league. Doug Peterson took the year off. He kind of saw the entire league from a bird's eye view. He saw how Debo was used in San Francisco. I could see Etienne being used in that type of a fashion in Jacksonville there, and then he could be someone who could have some serious fantasy production as well as real life production there in Jacksonville for a team that obviously needs some breath of fresh air in that offense. They added so many new pieces. People forgot this guy was a first round pick. They had a lot of plans for him there in the last regime. Let Doug Peterson take over an offensive mind. I feel like he could be someone who could have a big year there in Jacksonville this year.
maybe that Debo role comes to fruition. I saw ETN himself say like he'd be down to play that. But, you know, in my opinion, he's always just been a running back that they're trying to use out as a wide receiver as well, which is great. But, you know, we kind of hear this chatter every single offseason with the running back getting more snaps in the slot or out wide or what have you. So I just look at this depth chart compared to a lot of other ones at running back, and ETN has a chance to get, you know, forget about the Debo role. He has a chance to get the McCaffrey role, depending on how some of these things shake out. I mean, the fact that people aren't coming around to the thought that James Robinson like might not play this year. I've had, you know, conversations with some doctors in the fantasy industry that just think it's a potential long shot. We don't know who did his surgery. We don't really know how that's going. And even listening to Doug Peterson talk about it, I mean, ETN's out there running around and the hope is that Robinson is going to be doing that soon. But even if he comes back from the Achilles, credit to Cam Akers and Marlon Mack for getting back as quick as they did. Certainly did not look like they were at 100% when they were out there. So let's say even in a best case scenario, Robinson is healthy and good to go by week one. Like, they drafted ETN the first round for a reason. I know Urban Meyer's gone, but the GM that okayed that pick is not gone. And I just think ETN profiles as someone that basically has that DeAndre Swift role right now, the lead back that's going to be catching a lot of passes and also has the opportunity to just get a lot of rush attempts. Like, that seems like his worst case scenario. He's a little high right now for sleeper status, going RB 18 over underdog, but I'm with you on trying to get exposure to him. I have him ranked as my RB 16 because of that pass catching goodness. In fantasy football, we give a full point just for catching the ball. I think it's stupid. I don't, you know, gaining 10 rushing yards is a lot harder than catching one of those pop passes from Jimmy G, man. So I don't think that, you know, a 40 yard catch down the sideline should be equivalent to a running back catching a screen, but it's the game we play. And historically, one target is worth about 2.7 carries in terms of expected fantasy points. So for ETN, having that pass down ability, this is the exact type of target we should be trying to get playing full PPR fantasy football.
Yeah, and I don't know when James Robinson's gonna come back, and I love James Robinson. His story is awesome, but it's, again, it's a new head coach, and he's not on the field right now, and the guy who is ETN, and he right now is going to be the lead back there in Jacksonville. And I feel like if Doug Peterson likes what he sees right now, he's going to be the guy there in Jacksonville next to Trevor Lawrence throughout this season, and he's due for a nice year there in the backfield. All right, let's keep this going. Who do you have next, Ian?
Got another running back, and this is why I wanted to do my big disclaimer early on, because if we get a graphic on my sleepers, there's gonna be a lot of haters out there on Twitter. But Ronald Jones currently going off the board the RB40. I think he has a chance to be this year's James Conner, a veteran running back that's kind of been written off as just, he sucks, he's no good, it's Ronald Jones, why would you ever want to draft Ronald Jones? Well, you know, you said it before, Andy Reid likes Juju Smith-Schuster. Andy Reid apparently likes Ronald Jones enough to start the season with him as his projected early down back. So I kind of value Andy Reid's opinion a little bit more than whatever we might think about the guy. And to be fair to Rojo, his hands are terrible. I don't think there's any debate about that. One time they were playing the Bears and Rojo caught a touchdown. He caught the touchdown, but the ref said it was incomplete. And he basically shrugged his shoulders and like flipped the ball. Like, oh yeah, I probably did drop it. So no, I don't think Rojo is going to be catching any targets, but man, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the big problem after his rookie year was this idea that he couldn't score near the goal line. I think a little bit overrated, but let's face it, more of a pass down back. I don't think someone that they're necessarily signing up to give him an 80% role. So when we look at the Chiefs, we all still expect them to put up plenty of points. There's no Darrell Williams. There's no Jerick McKinnon. It is going to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Ronald Jones splitting the work. And God forbid something happens to CEH, maybe we do see Ronald Jones as the feature back for the Kansas City Chiefs. So he has two seasons with over 1,000 yards. I understand he maybe didn't fulfill expectations as a second-round pick. Leonard Fournette came in and beat him out. But even dismissing the fact that, you know, when Connor was able to come in place of Edmonds last year and catch the ball more, I don't think that's as much on Rojo's table. But, man, I think someone in this offense certainly has a chance to score 10 plus rushing touchdowns and might as well be the goal line back going as the RB40. So anytime we can get a running back this late in such a good offense that should be looking at, in my opinion, 10 to 15 combined carries and targets per game, I will take that chance 8 days of the week.
And here's the thing that I like about that pick, because the Chiefs, they had Darrell Williams last year, who quietly had over 1,000 scrimmage yards, and they were perfectly fine with him leaving. Like his, he wanted to go back. His agent wanted him to go back, and they never made an offer. And he got a minimum offer in Arizona. He'll probably take over the Chase Edmonds role. My point is that they let him go, and they were like, we'll pay money to Ronald Jones and even give him some guaranteed money in there for him to come in. So there's clearly some type of a role that Andy Reid sees this guy having there. And he's definitely someone who people should be keeping an eye on this season in Kansas City. I know the Tampa Bay thing just didn't work, and it was weird because as soon as Bruce Arians came in, I think at one point he's like, he's a star, he's gonna be the starter, and then the next week he was basically in the doghouse, and I don't know what happened from there. So whatever it is, he's now in Kansas City, a fresh start. And from my understanding also, there is, it's not a big relationship, but there's a small relationship there with Patrick Mahomes already from prior. So there are stuff going on there that is going his way for this upcoming season. All right, we haven't mentioned any tight ends yet, so I'm going to go to the tight end direction here. And I'll go with a player who just got paid some big money, and that is David Njoku in Cleveland. The one thing that people have to understand with all these deals that happen and extensions is that teams aren't really rewarding you for what you've done in the past. It's what they believe you'll do in the future, in the coming years. And that's what they have the faith right now in David Njoku by giving him that big deal. And he's always been this freakishly built athlete, and it just hasn't really come together. Now Austin Hooper is no longer there, so there won't be as many, I guess, heavy tight end sets. He's essentially the number one tight end. Amari Cooper is the number one receiver there. I really don't know who else is the options after him. That could be Njoku. And obviously, the quarterback position isn't really, it's really shaky right now. There's a lot going on in the Deshaun Watson world at the moment, but whoever will be under center, it feels like based off all the signs we've been given this offseason, this is the time where the Browns believe that David Njoku takes the next step and finally feels like that first round pick that happened 5 years ago, and he lives up to those expectations. He's been working on blocking. That's one of the reasons why they paid him, but they believe he could be a great receiver as well. And based off that roster right now, it feels like they have a role for him to do just that this year.
He turns 26 in July, which is wild.
So young.
He's been in the league for so long.
It's like jaw dropping when you see that. I feel like he's been around forever.
It's him and Amari Cooper, man. Just they never get older, apparently. But with Njoku, yeah, he's going as the tight end 18 off the board right now. I think he's being his value suppressed because of kind of the things you were talking about. The potential for Jacoby Brissett to potentially start this entire season. But even that aside, we do have a player where, although I still think they're going to use two tight ends, Kevin Stefanski's always done this, you know, even going back to his Minnesota days. And Harrison Bryant, in his own right, is a very good young player. But we did see last year when Hooper missed a game, Bryant got a lot of snaps, and Njoku got 100% of them. And there just aren't that many tight ends in the league that have the chance to be their offense's number two pass game option, which I think is firmly on the table for Njoku. So as long as his price stays where it is, man, I think he is perfectly fine in that late round tight end mold. I actually have, I'll throw two tight ends at you real quick. Because I've been trying to find this year's Dawson Knox, the talented, super cheap tight end that's in a really good offense where, hey, he has a good enough quarterback where maybe he can make 70 or 80 targets, actually count in fantasy land, get 8 or 10 touchdowns. My two top guys right now, Irv Smith going off the board as a tight end 15 and Gerald Everett going off the board as a tight end 21. With Irv Smith, Kevin O'Connell coming over from the Rams. Can we chill on like the Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp role? Justin Jefferson had maybe the best start to a career of any wide receiver ever. He doesn't need the Cooper Kupp role. Like, he's fine doing what he's been doing. If he gets a few extra targets, like, that's great, but he's going to be great regardless. Let's talk about Irv Smith getting the every down Tyler Higbee role for the first time in his career, because Irv Smith, just like Dallas Goedert early on in his career, just didn't have the opportunity to get that starting job because of the system, because in his case, Kyle Rudolph was ahead of him. You look at the offense now, Ben Elfson, apologies on that name, and Johnny Munt, that's the competition. Like, Tyler Conklin went to the Jets, this is Irv Smith's job. From my understanding, he is progressing just fine from the injury, which happened obviously last preseason.
It's been a year almost. Yeah,
exactly. So I think Irv Smith is going to be out there on the field all the time in a Vikings offense that wants to throw the ball more, with a pretty damn good quarterback in Kirk Cousins. I know he's not as good in prime time and in the playoffs as everyone would prefer. He still puts up pretty big numbers each and every year. So love me some Irv Smith. And then with Gerald Everett, 2-year, $12 million deal with $8 million fully guaranteed. Yep. I mean, last year, Jared Cook got a 1-year, $4.5 million deal, and he got 83 targets for it. So the Chargers do like to use multiple tight ends. We'll see Donald Parr for him there. Trey McKitty might even get some snaps with Steven Anderson gone. But man, with Everett, he's always been someone that checks all the athletic boxes, and he just unfortunately split time with Tyler Higbee throughout his career. Last year, once Russell Wilson came back, he was the overall tight end 8 from weeks 10 through 18. So yeah, the offense is going to flow through Keenan, Mike, Austin Eckler first and foremost. But you know, just like we were saying with Russell Gage, like we're okay taking a complimentary option when Tom Brady's under center. I feel the same way with Justin Herbert under center. So Irv Smith, Gerald Everett, David Njoku, those are my three favorite late round tight ends this year.
Absolutely. I think 2 years ago that late round tight end that went crazy was Mark Andrews, right? That was him.
It was Tonyan. Tonyan.
It was Tonyan. Yeah. Was Mark Andrews also in that group? Or was he?
He was lower. He definitely wasn't a top five guy. Like he definitely showed out a little bit.
But yeah, but there's always going to be that guy who does it this year. So there are three names. I feel like people really forgot about Irv Smith as well. Another guy who just missed all of last year, early injury, and people just moved on. But he's back there in Minnesota with a new head coach. All right. I think we're actually up to you. Who do you have as your last pick here to wrap this up for your end?
I'm going to go with Jamison Crowder, currently coming off the board.
Wide receiver, 61. Loved that signing. Loved
Let's
it.
Go. Yeah, man. And I like Isaiah McKenzie as much as the next guy. You saw what he did against the Patriots last season. He's been just really dynamic for them in his entire tenure. But he didn't get paid. They paid him, I think, 2 years, $6 million. Like, he certainly projects to still be that offense's wide receiver 4, gadget type, do some good stuff in the return game. And that still leaves the possibility that Crowder works as Josh Allen's starting slot receiver. Bills wide receivers first in total targets last season, second in 2020. They know what they have in Josh Allen. They're going to throw the ball all over the yard. And like, there is a chance that Jamison Crowder ends up working as the number 2 pass game option in this offense. Cole Beasley had over 100 targets in each of the past 3 seasons. I like Gabriel Davis. I certainly have him ranked above Jamison Crowder, but to see Josh Allen's one of his key receivers going this late in the draft, I mean, the worst case scenario is that we get to week 1 and what happened like last year in the final 2 games when Beasley was coming back playing hurt, they basically split his snaps with Isaiah McKenzie. If that happens, then it's going to be tough for Crowder to give us too much. But again, when he's going outside the top 60 wide receivers, particularly in redraft, man, you could just cut Crowder at that point and you probably need to get some roster space soon anyway, just because of the nature of fantasy football. So when you get in these later rounds of the drafts, just try to take someone that you know is going to be starting and ideally is in a good offense. I think we've seen enough from Crowder over the years to believe he's a pretty damn good football player in his own right. So again, buying that player closer to the floor than the ceiling, I think Jamison Crowder is an awesome late round value right now.
Exactly. And I feel like we have a little bit of a trend here. I mean, one of the things that we're all seeing is if there's a star quarterback there and there's potential for targets for that guy, you might as well take that risk. And if he pops off, I mean, you just got to steal there in those later rounds. Jamison Crowder came in, got a 1-year deal after all those years with the Jets and Washington. And now he's basically with the best quarterback he's ever had. And he's going to be there with potential to be the starting slot wide receiver. Before I get my last pick, it's going to be a rookie. I'm curious here, what are your opinions on drafting rookies in fantasy? Is there an element of it's a bit risky? Is it whatever? What do you think about doing that?
When the price is right, it's all good. I will say, I think naturally we tend to overrate them because we spend February through April talking about the same guys over and over again. So sometimes these year 2, year 3 players who aren't getting the headlines probably should be getting more value in fantasy land. But the big rule of thumb, I would say, if they weren't drafted in the top 3 rounds, you got to be really careful about expecting anything. Over 80% of top performing rookie year players, so top 12 quarterbacks and tight ends, top 24 running backs, wide receivers, 80% of every single position have been a top 3 round pick. So that's what annoys me when it's like, who's going to be this year's like James Robinson? Who's going to be this next decade's James Robinson? Because this does not happen every single year. So with the rookies, you know, there are a few exceptions. You know, Tyler Allgeier in Atlanta, 5th round pick, but it's such a soft backfield. There might be a chance. In general, though, again, I'm okay getting them as long as the price is right. But generally, I do think we see them a little bit overrated coming out because of that extra media attention. Similar sentiment with the free agency. Like, we just don't usually see players switch teams and then provide better value than they have before. Might be a pretty good sign that they're not, you know, due for, you know, the grass might be greener on the other side and a lot of things in life, but I'm not so sure when an NFL team lets a player walk without even getting anything in return for them trade-wise.
All right, so this is going to be interesting because I'm going to go with Chris Olave in New Orleans here with my last pick. And again, it's a rookie, and I get if there's some risk for some people, but it's besides the fact that he was awesome at Ohio State and besides the fact that he gets to play now with Michael Thomas and Jarvis Landry, it's basically how much the Saints went all out to make sure they get him. And knowing how well they do in draft and how good they are historically with that front office when it comes to drafting, I think it's noteworthy. And the Saints, they made that trade with Philly to get the extra first round pick. Then they made the trade of Washington to move up from 15 to 11. So they gave up so many picks. They gave up future one, a future two, a future three, so many things in order to make sure they secure Chris Olave. I think the Saints have a plan for this guy. Jameis Winston has already been, you know, raving about him. The word that everyone talks about is, I think the word is smooth, right? That's what everyone's talking about with him.
I've heard that once or twice.
It's the word that keeps on coming out of New Orleans, but it's basically the entire situation reminds me a little bit of, it was 2017, that historic draft that they had. They drafted Alvin Kamara in the third round. They were aiming to get Alvin Kamara coming into that draft. And in that third round, they had a feeling that he was about to go off the board. So what they did, they gave up a future second to get back into the third round, which is a trade that every draft chart in the world tell you not to do. But they did it knowing how much they love Alvin Kamara. And look at him now. I feel like they know something about Chris Olave that they had to make sure they secure him. They went all out to get him. And he's in a situation right now where he'll be with Michael Thomas, who is slowly but surely getting back. Jarvis Landry is out there as well. But simply based off the eye for talent that New Orleans has with Mickey Loomis and the rest of that staff, it feels like they have something special ready for Chris Olave this season as he gets ready to roll out there with Jameis Winston. What do you think about that pick?
I've done about 20 underdog drafts since the NFL draft ended. And right now, the only wide receiver that I drafted more than Chris Olave is Terry McLaurin out in Washington. Tim Patrick's right up there too. Shout out to maybe the Broncos' best receiver. I don't know. But with Chris Olave, man, everything he just said, and also just the reality that Jameis Winston was pretty damn good last year from what we saw from him. I know that they were, you know, if you look at non-garbage time, pass play rate, they're the most run-heavy offense in the NFL when Jameis was under center. But look who he was throwing the ball to. Why wouldn't they be a run-heavy offense at that point? With all due respect to Marquez Callaway and stuff, like, let's, again, one big thing in fantasy, I think we tend to sometimes put too much stock into what happened last year instead of trying to project what's going to happen next year. And, you know, I want to be careful about making too big of leaps and, you know, expecting a similar offensive staff to just completely change their philosophy. But when you have Olave, Michael Thomas, Jarvis Landry, you commit to Jameis Winston for 2 years, yeah, I do think it's fair to project this offense to throw the ball around a little bit more. And for Olave to be coming in as Jameis's deep ball threat, man, Jameis number two in big time throw rate last year, number eight in QB rating. I mean, we can talk about the bad, you know, decisions here and there all we want, but Jameis throws a beautiful deep ball, and I think even the haters would have to admit that. So Chris Olave, depending on the Michael Thomas situation with the injury, could be forced to be a number one. And hell, maybe he just works as a number one anyway. It's not like Michael Thomas has caught any passes from Jameis over the past few seasons. So love that call. And for whatever reason, I think people may be putting too much stock into Olave's questionable tackle breaking numbers at Ohio State. Like, he's going a good chunk behind the Drake Londons, the Garrett Wilsons of the world. So if you can get Olave outside the top 40 or so wide receivers, man, sign me up every time.
Right. And I think what we're seeing here also is, I guess, the perspective of how we look at this stuff. Like, I kind of give it more of a front office money situation while everyone else gives out numbers. But the way these teams look at this stuff is always interesting to me. And that's the way I've always based most of my fantasy picking whenever that time comes around. All right. So we've both done 5 picks each. My guys here were Russell Gage, Juju Smith-Schuster, Travis Etienne, David Njoku, and Chris Olave. Remind people who you had, if you could.
I got Justin Fields, Miles Sanders, Ronald Jones, Kenny Golladay, Jameson Crowder, Irv Smith, and Gerald Everett.
All right, so there we go. So a little bit more than 5 there as we added as well as we kept on going here. So one more thing I want to do before I end this, because you mentioned Justin Fields early. We all know when it comes to fantasy, especially the regular drafts, is you kind of wait to get your quarterback. I want to ask you about one in particular because it's such a polarizing topic. Where do you sit with Tua with all those weapons and the new offensive staff there that he has there? Where do you sit with him? There's people who just don't like him. There's people who feel like he's taking off. Where are you when it comes to just fantasy? Where, again, doesn't matter about real life, his numbers are going to be putting up there this year.
The only problem with Tua is he's mobile, but he doesn't use it to his advantage. I mean, even going back to Alabama, he's never rushed for even 50 yards in a game. So just from that factor alone, he's going to need to win, like, kind of in the same way Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr win, you know, 30 plus touchdowns, 4,500 plus passing yards, which, hey, you add Tyreek Hill to the offense, maybe it's possible. I loved I love Tyreek kind of throwing Matt Moore under the bus the other day.
I saw that. That was hilarious. I mean, like, I kind of felt bad, but like, Tyreek has had some good quotes ever since he got to Miami. Like, that guy's press conference are becoming a little bit must watch.
Oh my gosh. That was just cracking me up. Some of the backhanded compliments will dish out sometimes. But with Tua, man, like, some of the more stable passing grades that, you know, we like to prioritize at PFF, 15th among 38 quarterbacks in PFF grade from a clean pocket, 17th on standard, 17th on first and second downs. Maybe he can ascend into top 10, top 12 territory, adding someone like Tyreek Hill. I mean, I would give Davante Adams, like, overall wide receiver one, best wide receiver in the league status, but I'm not sure if there's another receiver that, like, impacts the way defenses have to cover your offense the way Tyreek Hill does. So with that in mind, I could see it, but it's just tough for me to move him kind of into that top 15 ahead of guys like Stafford, Rodgers, Cousins, and Carr, who we've just seen them do it, and they're in pretty good offensive situations themselves. Yeah. So for me, Tua, he's kind of in that QB2 range with guys like Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, even your Daniel Jones, Mac Joneses of the world, where I don't think people in traditional one quarterback redraft leagues need to really be looking at them aside from streamer capability. But in best ball, when you need to draft two or three quarterbacks, if you find yourself with Tyreek or Waddle early on, absolutely stack them with Tua. So we'll see, man. I mean, Hill made an older Alex Smith look like a freaking star in real life in fantasy. So I'm not ruling it out. But again, it just comes down to the fact that Tua doesn't give us really anything on the ground. He's going to need to be just even better than we could hope for him to be as a passer in order for him to be really good in fantasy.
You just have to hope that Mike McDaniel opens him up a little bit there and that offense flourishes. I mean, it just, the reason I ask is just that it's like my timeline, it's just insane. It's like Tua is all over the place and we're in OTAs. The guy could throw an interception. All hell is breaking loose.
I was laughing, Ari, because like we have the Dolphins, the Twitter world is so far inside the Dolphins reporters' heads that like we're now getting air yards attached to like some of the tweets. So like, oh, 50 air yards that Tua went to Tyreek here. So that one video just sent Twitter into a frenzy, and now it's just the offseason of Tua, I guess.
It is. I mean, I can't imagine what we're going to have when training camp is rolling around and there's actual media there and everybody and all the cameras are there and NFL Network is there. It's just going to be nonstop until they finally get to week one and we have some real football. Well, Ian, I want to thank you for coming on. I think it'll be fun to look back at all these picks here once fantasy really starts to inch closer. Everyone can follow you on Twitter. It is at iHeartIt. And if there's any other sleepers that we missed, leave them in the comments or tweet at us. And one more thing, I guess, for all the fantasy people. Next week on the show, we have Scott Anson from NFL Red Zone. He's going to be on here. I think everyone who's into fantasy and anything football knows who that is. So be on the lookout for that as well. Ian, thanks for coming on. And I think we'll definitely do this again as fantasy gets closer.
Thank you, Ari.